Hello, what's up everybody? Jack Farr here from Farr's Views podcast from lovely Grey, Wembley Stadium. We are at episode 15. It's the 3rd of November today. And last week I made a couple of predictions for the game. It was kind of a preview of the upcoming game week in the Premier League. And what I wanted to do is just go back and look at how I did, how my predictions went. And what I kind of did was I tried to call the match. And then I tried to call maybe just one little detail about the match. So maybe the way the game went, the style of play that was being used, etc., etc. I just want to go back and see how well I did. And I think what I'm going to do week by week is just see how well I did beforehand and then make kind of predictions and preview the upcoming week as well. Because I think that's something that certainly from feedback I've had from a couple of people, that's something that you guys might actually quite like to hear. As much as I try and stay to my roots of covering stuff that maybe not everybody is talking about and everyone is trying to cover, I am kind of leaning now towards more of a case of, well, if you're that stubborn of staying on a topic like that, of stuff that nobody's talking about, some of the time there's a reason why people aren't talking about it. A lot of the time it's really important stuff that should have more light shed on it, but some of the time it really isn't in terms of it isn't very high in terms of public interest and therefore should be left alone. But anyway, moving on. So last week I went 7-3. So out of the 10 games, I got 7 correct, I got 3 wrong. And I just wanted to go through my correct games. So I got Manchester United, Spurs correct. I got Arsenal, Swansea correct. Very proud of myself. I called the Palace West Ham draw, which was a draw. Liverpool beating Huddersfield, City beating West Brom, Chelsea beating Bournemouth, and Burnley beating Newcastle. Now, of course, I am fully aware of how ridiculous it sounds to pat myself on the back for calling Chelsea beating Bournemouth, City beating West Brom, Liverpool beating Huddersfield, Arsenal beating Swansea. You know, those, what was that, 5 games? 1, 2, 3. So those 4 games in particular, you would say are probably, you know, rip your arm off. That's a guarantee. However, a couple of the other 3 games were ones that may have been slightly more difficult to call. And, you know, I still just want to go through them. So the Man United Spurs game, I called it correctly, first and foremost. I mean, you look at the game and also certainly watching the game as well, it becomes very apparent it's the 2 best defences in the league playing football against each other and with both sets of, you know, both teams missing major players. Harry Kane, who, as I've said in the most, you know, recent podcast, I believe is the best number 9 in the world. That's excluding players like Ronaldo, Messi and Dybala, who are not really, in my opinion, number 9s. And also Man United missing the likes of Zlatan, Paul Pogba, etc, etc. Now, it was a close game. I said it would be a close game. 2 best defences in the league, Man United won 1-0. So I'm really proud of myself calling that game correctly. Arsenal versus Swansea, Arsenal to win. I guess I thought that Arsenal would win by a bigger margin, but I still called the game correctly, which I'm obviously very happy about. Palace West Ham as a draw, I think, is really, really interesting. I think West Ham are getting some of their bigger players back, and we saw that over the weekend. But Palace really are rejuvenated by Wilfried Zaha coming back. There's a little bit more belief in the team, and I think we'll see Palace start to play a lot better. And West Ham, I think, will still be a little bit hit and miss until they get consistent 11 out every single week with their good players back. But yeah, called that one correctly. Really, really proud of that. Liverpool beating Huddersfield, of course, and lots of goals was my kind of little note there. 3-0, I think that's a decent amount of goals. That's a very convincing win for Liverpool. West Brom against City. Now, obviously this game is not how I thought it would go. I did really see City dominating the ball, which of course they did, and City having to try to break West Brom down, West Brom kind of counter-attacking. It kind of went that way, but 3-2 was really not the kind of scoreline that I was expecting. So certainly a really, really good game. Certainly called it correctly, just not the way that I thought the game would pan out. Bournemouth against Chelsea. Chelsea, I thought they'd win, you know, by a narrow margin. They're really not playing to their full potential at the moment, Chelsea. I've actually been to see a lot of Chelsea games recently. A friend of mine has a spare ticket for me to go. And I've been to a number of games. And, you can see the quality on the pitch. They're just not hitting the heights that you'd maybe be expecting them to. The 3-3 with Roma, I was very privileged to go and see. Amazing game as a Roma fan myself. And then also Roma beating Chelsea. Obviously, a little bit of me is very, very pleased that that happened. Even though, of course, I want the English teams to progress as far as they can. I want, you know, 5 English teams into the into the knockouts. It's certainly looking that way. And I want an English winner of the Champions League this year. But yeah, Chelsea winning by a narrow win against Bournemouth, who do seem in a bit of trouble. And then Burnley against Newcastle. Burnley just have it going at the moment. I think Sean Dyche has got a lot of momentum on his side, a lot of respect from many, many people. And I think he's got the exact kind of players he wants in his football team so that they can be successful. Whereas I think the same can't be said for Rafael Benitez. I think Rafa's a better manager than Sean Dyche, but I think that Rafa was not backed maybe as Sean Dyche was in the summer to get the types of players that he wanted to get in the door. So those are my 7 correct predictions. Of course, like I said, 4 of those are kind of gimmies, so to speak. Here are the games I got wrong. So Watford against Stoke, I thought Watford would win, especially being at home. But I did make the point that Stoke on their day really can be anybody. There's a lot of talent in that team. And on the odd day, you really can expect Stoke to give anybody a game, anybody in the world. So Stoke winning 1-0, not going to be too upset about that. It wasn't totally wrong on my part. Brighton against Saints. I thought Saints would win that one. I thought they'd turned a corner, certainly in terms of not starting Shane Long as much. Lamina looks really, really good. Van Dijk's come back into the fold. They have another massive centre-back, and I forget his name. Dutchman, I completely forget his name. I'm very, very sorry. But I was expecting a good kind of defence, a solid midfield, and then their attack to start clicking again, start to rack up a couple of wins. But Brighton won the game. And I think the thing that really kind of strikes me most about it, Pascal Gross is the man. Pascal Gross is unreal. He was he created the most chances in the Bundesliga last year. And keep in mind, he did not play for Bayern. He did not play for Dortmund. He did not play for Leverkusen. You see where I'm going with this. He played for, I believe it was a Hertha Berlin side, who really are not at the top of their game. Unfortunately, that for a lot of people maybe put them off. But Brighton got an absolute steal. He's a really top quality player, and I think that he could easily make certainly in the to talk about being a starting position in one of the top 6 sides, if not certainly a substitute or rotating position in the top 6 sides. And I think we will see Gross move on to pastures new, potentially within a year, but almost certainly within 18 months to 2 years. But yeah, he can't be understated, but I did get that one wrong. Brighton beat Saints. Leicester-Everton, I had down as a score draw. Of course, you have to make a couple of bets as draws. The Palace-West Ham one paid off for me, but the Leicester-Everton one, I thought it would be a score draw. It wasn't. It's a very convincing 2-0 win for Leicester. And Everton, yet again, just look legless out there. No speed, no pace. They can't totally rely on Dominic Calvert-Lewin the entire time. To provide that injection of pace. Ademola Lookman is on the bench, who I rate very highly as well. But yet again, you can't just sign a bunch of slow lumbering number 10s, Rooney, Sigurdsson, Sandro, etc., and then expect to beat teams by little bits of trickery, because it's easy to play against. You need the speed and the dynamism around the trickery. Perfect example of that is Manchester City. You need the Bernardo Silvas and David Silvas and Kevin De Bruyne's around players like Sterling, Sané, Gabriel Jesus, Aguero, etc., etc. So yeah, got that one wrong. So that leaves me at 7-3 for my predictions for the year. What I will do probably at the end of this podcast is just go through the game week for this week and just make a couple of, like I say, I really haven't written anything down or planned anything for this podcast. Usually what I do is I just let my mind go and kind of break stuff down as I see it and as I pick it up on the day. So there's no really forethought that's gone into it. But what I'll try and do is maybe make a couple of points about the game and then give what I think the result will be. So moving on, I did just want to very, very quickly talk about the Spurs-Real Madrid game. I actually worked at the game. I worked for a company called Delaware North, which is a hospitality company, and they do stadiums across the world, actually, but quite a few stadiums in London, and it was my first shift as a box waiter. Safe to say, it was not the most fantastic shift in the world. I had 14 French people in my box. I was working alone in my first shift. I've worked in pubs before. I've sold running shoes before. I've interacted with the public before. And obviously, I'm well aware of how you need to remain polite and you need to do the right thing by the customer, etc., because I've had several years of experience in dealing with the public. The only difficulty here was, out of the 14 French people I had, there was only one member who actually spoke any English, and that led to a couple of issues. However, I digress. I was at the Spurs-Real Madrid game. I saw, at a time, 30 seconds of the game live on the pitch, peeping through my my blind in my box. There was also BT Sport and Sky Sports in the box itself on a nice big HD TV, so I got to actually watch the game from inside there. And I was just amazed by, I think, the level of complacency that's hit the big teams this year. And by the kind of two big teams, I guess you'd talk about would be Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, who are obviously what you would consider, or you would have considered historically, two of the big three teams in the world, obviously without a shadow of a doubt. But both of them, like I say, complacency's been a massive issue there, I think. I said in the podcast last week how I think that Real Madrid really messed up by not trying to sign a superstar, a marquee signing. All the teams that you see that are progressing and doing a lot better are usually the teams who've made some big signings. And I think the old adage that Sir Alex Ferguson used to do, and it's been kind of beaten into the ground by top level pundits, is that whenever United would win a title, they would sign a ridiculous player. You know, they would sign somebody good and they would get even better, and you'd think, well, they won the league, how can they get even better? This is the way in which you do it. I think Bayern missed a trick, I think Real Madrid missed a trick, and even though Ronaldo scored a goal, it wasn't a great goal, and Spurs were just much the better team throughout. They're a good benchmark of how I believe that English teams should be playing, actually, Spurs. Eric Dier just sums up the way that England should be playing going forward. I've spoken about this in a YouTube show with my friend James, and I still maintain that English players should be playing counter-attacking with physically bigger and better than you are football. And by that, I mean in your face, Eric Dier, Harry Maguire, Phil Jones, Harry Kane, you know, Dele Alli. We're not as technically gifted as some of the other teams. But what we are going to do, we're going to make sure you can't score against us, and then we're going to counter-attack, and we're going to be clinical when we counter-attack. We have faster wingers than you do, and we have faster fullbacks than you do. We have more athletic strikers than you do. We have bigger midfielders, bigger defenders, and you're not going to be able to beat us that way. The ball-playing style for England doesn't work, and I think that was well on show here as well. I know that a couple of the goals were very lucky for Spurs. I still maintain that deflection goals are not skill. It is very lucky. I think you saw, even before the ball crossed the line, you saw Sergio Ramos's face as it hit off him. Dele Alli's shot hit off him and went in. Eriksen's goal was lovely, and Harry Kane's set up for it was absolutely beautiful. But yeah, I was surprised at the game. I just wanted to say that I was there. The atmosphere was absolutely electric, certainly the best atmosphere I've ever witnessed within Wembley Stadium. And yeah, I just wanted to touch on that very quickly and kind of give a nice kudos to Spurs, and also maybe a kick up the arse to Real Madrid, who really should be doing better. I did read a statistic recently. Cristiano Ronaldo has the worst shot conversion in Europe's top five leagues. I believe it's around 2.5%. So for every shot he takes, there is a 2.5% chance thus far that it will actually go in, compared to everyone else in the league. I think that's probably based on a minimum amount of shots, etc. But yes. So next, I just wanted to talk about who would be the next Everton manager. And I kind of just before I hit record here, I kind of thought, oh, what do I want to talk about today? What's on my mind? And I wanted to do, obviously, from looking at last week and my predictions, and I wanted to touch on the Spurs Real game. But then I kind of thought, well, hang on a minute. There's a position at a really, really big Premier League team. They're the sixth, seventh best team in the most successful league in the world. This is a job that people want. It's not some sort of, oh God, they've got, you know, like I've said before, they've got slow midfielders and it's not a very appealing job going forward. I understand that. But if you look at it purely from the business standpoint, you're looking at a very, very top team. There's no threat of relegation. You're going to always make money. And when you go in, you'll be able to do what you would like with the team. So I just went on Sky Bet, give them a little plug. And I went on Sky Bet and I looked at their manager specials and the odds of who should be the next manager. And I saw a couple of the names. And I know Sam Allardyce is up there, but I still think that people, every time that somebody loses their job, somebody goes, oh, it'll be Big Sam. I honestly don't know if clubs are happy to deal with the PR headache that would be how Sam got let go of his England job. So I think that lots of betting companies are giving him really, really short odds because everyone thinks it's going to be him. Or maybe that's the way the public are voting, they think that Big Sam's going to get it. Honestly, I would say that if I was in a public relations department at a football club, even though Big Sam would be maybe the perfect manager, I still would not put him up there. I think the media headache you're going to get, like I say, public relations, you're going to get screwed over for it, and there's surely a better candidate who hasn't had any negative history before. So, Big Sam, I think no. Even though I think he's the favourite, I still think no. No doubt he will be announced in a couple of hours. I then saw along the list, and I saw Sean Dyche. And as much as I like Sean Dyche, and I think he's incredible, I don't think this is the job for him. I think he needs a certain style of player in his team. And it's why, in my opinion, he will never manage at the elite level. Because he's stuck with this physical style of play, which doesn't match up with any of the big teams. So it's why for me, Sean Dyche may not hit the heights unless he really at an elite level plays his style of football, which is obviously something we haven't seen in decades. It would be amazing if it happened, but I'm sure it won't. If I was Sean Dyche, I've got red hair, so I'm nearly there. But if I was Sean Dyche and I got an Everton job offer, I would strongly, strongly consider what I have going at Burnley and how his stock is just steadily rising. And if he goes to Everton, the stock will remain there until he's successful. And if it's not, his stock will plummet down again. Everton may get rid of him again within 18 months or a year. And then where's that left him? Whereas at Burnley, he can build something, he can build a reputation, so on and so forth. I then looked at a couple of other managers. So I saw Rafa Benitez up there. Now, Rafa Benitez is an incredible manager. We need to look at his track record. Real Madrid, when he was at Liverpool, he really has done incredible things in his career. He really has. And the thing is, the fact he is at Newcastle is an incredible steal for them. And it long term, it will hold them in very, very, very good stead. If I'm Rafa Benitez, I might look at the Everton job and think, hey, I'm probably going to earn a little bit more money. Hopefully, the board will be behind me in terms of investment. So for me, who should be Everton manager on the shortlist? I would put Rafa Benitez on the shortlist because I don't know what Newcastle would be able to do to keep him if Everton came in with an offer. Unsworth. I believe it's David Unsworth. I would give David Unsworth a shot as well. He's looked really good. I know the results haven't really been going his way, but I think the players are behind him. He seems to have the backing of the players. He seems like a really charismatic, nice guy. I know that when you're looking at elite level football management or, you know, top level football manager in the Premier League, that maybe a nice guy isn't always going to be the one that, you know, you want a guy that gets results first and foremost. But I would put him on the shortlist as well and give him a shot. Why not? I joked before about Mikel Arteta as well. I think it would be great if he got the job. I don't think it's the right time for him to, but I still think that that it would be great if Mikel Arteta got the job, but I wouldn't put him on my shortlist of three. And then my final spot would be for Eddie Howe. I think Eddie Howe, if you look at his history of how well he's done at Bournemouth, I think you can see a group of players at Bournemouth now that have just run out of steam. They've had to work, I'd say, probably harder than most other teams to remain in the league because of the lack of quality they have. So it's more about work ethic to beat your opponents than skill and talent. And I think you're seeing, certainly for some of their players who were with them in League One, that they're kind of running out of steam a little bit. If I'm Eddie Howe, I would be selfish. I think he has reserved the right to be selfish. And what I would do is jump ship. I'd go to Everton. I think he'd be given a good amount of time because he wouldn't be expected to make top four. As long as he doesn't really, really slip down into the bottom half of the table or anything like this, he can work with the likes of Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Ademola Lookman. I know they've got Mason Holgate, got Galloway, I think, and a bunch of other players in Everton's team. You look at his team at Bournemouth as well, English young players he's worked with in the past as well. So I honestly believe that Eddie Howe would be a really, really great fit at Everton, and that would probably be my pick. But yeah, so my takeaways from that are I wouldn't be Sean Dyche. I'd maybe give Unsworth a shot, maybe Rafa, maybe Eddie Howe, and I think it's too soon for Mikel Arteta. So, moving on to my last little bit that I kind of wanted to talk about today. And this is something that I don't think many people are talking about, apart from the really top end of the players in this list. It's who should do what as their contracts are coming to an end. And I think that what's interesting here is I've got a list of players, and these were taken from transfermarkt.de. And these are just the top market value players who have their contracts coming up this summer. And it's what I think they should do and where I think they should go. And I've got a list of 1, 2, 3... I've got 11 players here. Basically, as it went further and further down the list, it was players like Chris Brunt and such. And I don't think people would honestly care to hear me talk about them. So I just want to talk about these players and basically what they should do with this amount of time left on their contract. So first of all, we have Mesut Ozil of Arsenal. If I'm Mesut Ozil, I went on a bit of a rant on Twitter about this the other day. About comparing him to Kevin De Bruyne and all this kind of stuff. Mesut Ozil is an incredible, incredible footballer. If you want to talk about him not tracking back and you don't want to do this and you don't want to do this, I honestly believe you need to classify Ozil more as a forward than as a midfielder. I know that won't sound very nice because everyone would claim that he is that kind of midfielder, maybe a 10, an attacking midfielder. He really is a forward player, okay? So you really can't rely on him to do any defensive work for you. Period. Okay. He's created so many chances. And as I said on Twitter, and I think it's very apt, can anybody tell me what the difference is between assists and chances created? The motherfucker that scores or doesn't score. It's as simple as that. Assists are more looked at because they actually result in goals. But a chance created is a chance created. Now, of course, there are some chances are better than others. If you play a pass that leads somebody to an open goal, that's a better chance than setting somebody up for a 25-yard hit. I totally understand and am appreciative of that. However, Mesut Ozil creates chances in football teams. Now, for the amount of money he's on, I think the only places that he would be able to justify getting the same amount, maybe a little bit more or maybe a little bit less, would be Manchester United. Of course, there's rumours going around that he might be wanted at Manchester United. Bayern Munich, if they can find a place for him in that team, if they've got people leaving, Robin, Ribery, etc., coming to the end of their careers, then I kind of look at that and think, I honestly don't know what he should do. Now, unless he wants to try and make a go of it in America, because keep in mind, this is somebody who's won a World Cup, he's won Champions Leagues, He's done. He's done it all. He's not going to win the Ballon d'Or, so he gets to really have the luxury of doing whatever he wants for the rest of his career. The Manchester United move, staying at Arsenal perhaps might be nice. It might be a nice way to live your life in North London. Living in London, earning loads of money. You don't owe anybody anything at this point. You're still a great player, fantastic player to watch. You can do whatever you want. But that would be me for Ozil. I'd sign a new contract at Arsenal. Move to United or maybe Bayern Munich. I wouldn't go back to Spain. I think the stresses and pressures of him going back to Spain wouldn't be good. And then the other option, of course, is PSG. But I don't know where he's making it into that team with the players that they've recently signed or recently got. Next is Alexis Sanchez. Obviously, the main rumours now are that he is going to Manchester City. If that's what he has his heart set on, winning the league as well, and obviously making more of a stamp in European competitions, there's no better team to join at this point than Manchester City. So if I was Alexis Sanchez, I would either play ball with Arsenal and let him join in January, or I would say, no thanks, any other team that's willing to pay for me. I'm going to wait until my free contract, to go to Manchester City. However, if City are going to win the league this year, Alexis may want to push for the move in January so he can have that name in that title winning team, as opposed to maybe next year, City don't play so well, maybe Pep leaves, whatever. United come strong, Chelsea spend some money, Spurs look good, Arsenal spend some money, and then maybe he's lost in limbo and still will never win the league. I would hold out for City if I'm Alexis Sanchez. Emre Can is one of my favourite players to watch. His contract is also up in the summer. I think he's been great for Liverpool. I think that if he's sold, then Liverpool will get a true kind of monstrous holding midfielder, which is good for Liverpool. So I honestly think Emre Can should leave, and I think he should go to Bayern Munich because it fits the mould of what all decent German players do. They either play for the top teams, so you're looking at Toni Kroos, just as an example, or you go play for Bayern Munich and for your national team. I honestly see him as a future captain material. He leads by example. I think he's a very well-liked player in the Liverpool dressing room, and I would hold out to go to Bayern Munich if, of course, they do want them. Failing that, step it up. Move to a Chelsea or one of the Manchester teams, or even Spurs, or Arsenal. Step your game up from the Liverpool team just to reach that top tier. I still wouldn't put Liverpool in the tier with the Manchester teams and Chelsea, just in terms of what they can foreseeably achieve. But that's what I would do if I was Emre Can. Juan Mata is a really interesting one. Yet again, another European Cup and World Cup winner. It's difficult to say what he should do. I'm sure that he will be offered a new contract, but I think he's doing fantastic things with the 1% common goal thing. I'm very, very, very proud of him for doing that and all the other players that have joined and are helping him do that. But if I'm Juan Mata, he can do whatever he wants. I don't think there needs to be a case for him to go to any particular club. He's not going to win the Ballon d'Or. I think he's won the Champions League. I don't know what else he has to achieve. If he wants to keep up his charity stuff, then great. So honestly, if I was to give him a recommendation, if United are offering him another 3-year deal or whatever, I'd sign the new 3-year deal at United. He's well-liked at the club, well-liked in world football, and if he keeps up his charitable efforts, I'm sure that will be recognised and he'll get a good sense of fulfilment from that. Next up is Ander Herrera. I honestly don't know where Ander Herrera would actually go or fit, or if he has the quality and the talent that any team would actually want him. So if United sign him, offer him a new deal, I would sign it. He works very hard, he's a good team player, but like I said, I don't see any club better than Manchester United offering him a deal. He gets decent minutes at United as well. He was fantastic last year, and if they offer him a new deal, he's there with close friends in De Gea and Mata, and I wouldn't see why he would leave. Ross Barkley is a really interesting one. I believe that Spurs are kind of tabling a bid for Barkley to sign for about, I think it's 10 million in January. I would end up going to Spurs anyway. So whether he goes for 10 million in January or whether he goes for free, that's the team he should go to. I think that he would be used really, really well there. He would add to the dynamic and array of options that Tottenham do have in midfield, whether it's Wanyama, Dyer, Dembele, Dele Alli, but it would include Barkley, Harry Winks. They've got a real kind of nice blend of players who can do different roles and have different talents. So I would go there. You'd be with one of the best, I don't know about managers, but certainly one of the best coaches in the world in Mauricio Pochettino. And I think that would be a really good move for him. And we want to see the best of Ross Barkley, and that's not going to happen at Everton. Especially in the state that the club finds itself in. Daley Blind is another player who's got contractors up coming into the year. Daley Blind has the talent and the technical ability, passing and composure, etc. He could play for any team in the world and not look out of place. So Daley Blind could play for Manchester City, he could play for Barca, he could play for Real. Whether you want him at City in the Fernandinho role of holding midfielder, or whether Barcelona want him just as a passing fullback, he can really do it all, and he is very, very talented. Like I say, he plays in a number of positions, which adds to his value. Yet again, he gets reasonable playing time at Manchester United. I don't know how well thought of he is at the club compared to maybe some other players. But if I'm Daily Blind, Manchester United offer me a new deal, I would accept it. Unless he has his heart set on maybe a move to Bayern or maybe some other bigger clubs, just to kind of try himself out. The one thing I would say that United may not offer him a deal is because I think Jose Mourinho is about to spend big on fullbacks. I think Valencia's old, I think, or getting there, winger turned fullback. Young has done a reasonable job, but these are not specialist fullbacks. And which leads me on to the fact that Jose Mourinho isn't very happy with Luke Shaw, whose deal is up at the end of the year. This one really kind of upsets me. I think that Luke Shaw had the potential to do an Ashley Cole and be the best left-back in the world at one point, based on how he was progressing at Saints before he moved to United. And certainly in his first couple of years at United, there were a couple of injuries, but certainly before he broke his leg, he was really, really strong and looked really, really good. David Alaba is immense. Marcelo is immense, and obviously he's nowhere near those levels as maybe people thought he might get to if he'd have developed as he could. If I was Luke Shaw, I would get a clean slate from Manchester United. I think the one thing I keep talking about is the Danny Rose Luke Shaw swap deal with money, and I know that swap deals never happen, but if Danny Rose, for example, was to go to Manchester United in the summer or in January, which I could very well see happening, you know, he wants more money, and maybe Spurs were offered Luke Shaw as well, then maybe they would take that, and I think that would work really well for him. But I think Luke Shaw needs to remain in the Premier League, but he needs week in, week out games to progress and get back to where he needs to be. Next is Fernandinho. His contract is up at the end of the year. What I would say to Fernandinho is that he's done a really good job. He's done a really good 7 out of 10 job at Manchester City since signing. He's now a really integral part of that team as well. He sits behind the attacking players that they have going forward, and really just dictates from that position. I believe that Pep's hope is that Ilkay Gundogan will be that player going forward, and maybe that Fernandinho may not be his spot. But I think that if he can remain at Manchester City in just a decent fashion as a holding midfielder, then that would be great for him. Failing that, the place I'd like him to go is Liverpool. I think Fernandinho would be great at Liverpool in very much the same role that he's doing at City. Just sit in front of the back four. If Emre Can's going to leave, just sit in front of the back four. Don't move, even though, regardless of what Jurgen Klopp tells you to do, just sit there and let play develop in front of you. Always be an option and just keep the play ticking. Next is Jack Wilshere. I would leave Jack Wilshere. I would go to a team where you can have a fresh start, where things are looking good, where you can kind of develop and show yourself to be the good player that you are. I wouldn't stay in the Premier League. I would go to Spain. I think that the style of play that he is be conducive to somewhere in the Spanish league, and if or even Portuguese league. So if a Porto, a Benfica, a Sporting Lisbon, a Braga, a Sevilla, a Valencia, Athletic Bilbao, I know they have quite strict rules on Basque players, but I think that if he can get into one of the Spanish or the Portuguese leagues as a starting player week in, week out, that would be a really good move for Jack Wilshere. Take a little bit less money, don't be greedy, become the best you that you can be, and do that. Next is Marouane Fellaini. His contract's coming up at the end of the year. Jose Mourinho really likes him. The Man United fans are turning onto liking him because of how effective he is. I hate him as a style of player, and he's a little bit of a dick as well. I don't know how many times you need to be told that when you jump up for a header, you don't throw your elbows outwards, because you could potentially really hurt somebody. I guarantee that he will stay at United and earn a big new contract, because Mourinho really likes him and he's proving to be incredibly effective. So that's my kind of rundown of I think that was 11 players whose contracts are up at the end of the year. Some of those players you may not have known of. Fellaini, I didn't know his contract was up. Herrera, I didn't know his contract was up. Who else in there? No, okay. But yeah, so that I kind of think is
is just kind of interesting. You know, it's certainly key to maybe think about what your players are going to do. And obviously the way that contracts work, you can already agree to pre-contract negotiations and deals come January the 1st. So the moment January 1st rolls around, clubs can come in and say, Liverpool can go to Fernandinho and go, hey, we'd like to pay you £120,000 a week if you'd like to come play for our football team, blah, blah, blah. And then that can be signed when the contract is up at their current club. Next, I just want, this will be a very, very quick point before I get onto the preview of next week's games. Welcome back Sadio Mane. I think he's going to be on the bench this weekend for Liverpool. I think Jurgen Klopp said in the press conference that he would play 15 minutes or so, maybe at the end, just get a clap from the players, hopefully when they think the game is won. But yeah, welcome back. The league has missed you. He is an immense talent. He's flamboyant. You don't know what's coming next from him. He really is effective in that Liverpool team with Jurgen Klopp. He's the perfect Jurgen Klopp player. And the league has missed you. So welcome back, Sadio Mane. Okay, next. So I just want to do a quick rundown of the coming games this week. And what I'll actually do is I will judge each of the players. I'm just going to find a pen. I will judge each of the teams and just say how I think the game's gonna turn out, and then just a little comment about how I think the game will go. And obviously, I'm 7-3 from last week. I'll add this on to next week. So first of all, the midday kickoff tomorrow is gonna be Stoke against Leicester. Now this is a really interesting game. Stoke are at home. Leicester have obviously just got Claude Puel as their manager, which I think, whilst many people will think that's a very unattractive, well, you wouldn't call it a signing, an unattractive hire, I suppose you'd call it, for Leicester, I think that really will stabilise Leicester, and it allows them to kind of do a little bit of a systems check and just see where they're at whilst Claude Puel delivers them Premier League football again next year and hopefully solidifies them going forward. Yeah, I also don't think you can underestimate Adrian Silva coming into the team. He is immense and one of my favourite players. It's a shame that they couldn't get the paperwork done in time. But yeah, Stoke against Leicester. Yet again, Stoke can beat anybody on their day. Leicester coming off a 2-0 win against Everton. So I've got to stay for this game. I think it'll be a scored draw. So I'm going to put this one down as a draw for me. And my little note is going to be, I think it'll be a score draw, which isn't that much of a little extra punt, but you know, why not? So the next one I wanted to move on to was Huddersfield against West Brom. I think West Brom are going to have too much for Huddersfield, but I do think Huddersfield may score a goal. So I think maybe a 2-1 or a 3-1 to West Brom. So I'm going to give that to West Brom. And then I'll say 2-1 or 3-1 as a score prediction there. Newcastle versus Bournemouth. This will be a really interesting game. I do believe that Newcastle will win. I think Newcastle are going to be pissed off that they lost to Burnley last week, especially seeing as it was 1-0. And I think that Newcastle are going to beat Bournemouth. I think Bournemouth, as I mentioned about Eddie Howe beforehand, I think he needs to jump ship. I think he deserves the chance to jump ship because he's done a wonderful job, and I think his players are just running out of steam. And obviously there's an argument to be said that the manager should be there for keeping his players motivated, but I really think he's done enough and he must be exhausted. So that, I'm not going to give a little comment on that. I just think the Newcastle will be pissed off from last week. They'll be at home, and you know, Mikel Merino, these kinds of players will probably start firing. So next is Southampton against Burnley in Southampton. And I think this is a really tough game to call. I think that Burnley are playing really well at the moment, and I think it will continue that way. So yeah, again, I'm not going to make a kind of extra note about that, but I think that Burnley will beat Southampton. Saying that though, I forget the guy's name, the young guy, I think he's Moroccan, I think it's Boufal, Sofiane Boufal. He scored that incredible goal last weekend, and obviously if he can start playing better, he's a big confidence player, I think you can tell. If he starts playing well, Gabbiadini, Redmond, their good midfield, their defence, obviously Saints could easily get a result, but I think Burnley may have a little too much for Southampton there. Swansea against Brighton and Hove Albion. So I think that Pascal Gross is going to be involved again. Of course he is. It'll be an assist or a goal from him. And I think that Swansea, you know, they have all the right tools there with, you know, Bonnie, Abraham, for goodness sake, Renato Sanchez is out there as well. So I think that's potentially going to be a score draw as well. And that's going to be my little note there. Score draw there. West Ham against Liverpool in the London Stadium. There's no Coutinho. Mane's back, kind of. I just think that with West Ham, that West Ham really are my sleeper team that could really break out and just be a real force that people would have to be really worried about. They have talent all over the pitch. They really do. And I think the thing is, with Lanzini playing a little better and coming into things a little bit more, and with Antonio, you know, playing well, if Andy Carroll plays, I'm not sure if he's injured at the moment or not. They've decent fullbacks, good defenders, reasonable goalkeeper, solid central midfield. They could cause Liverpool problems, who love conceding goals. But the other thing Liverpool like doing is scoring goals. So I think that that game is going to have a minimum of 3 goals in it. And I'm going to give it to Liverpool. But I think that that game is going to have 3 goals in it. Next game is Tottenham against Crystal Palace. I think Tottenham are going to be really up from the way that they played against Real Madrid. It's nice for them to have a home Wembley game after that success at the Wembley game. I don't think they're going to slope off that much. And I think that if you look at the way that they played, it really wasn't kind of an all-action Tottenham performance. So I think they'll be relatively well-rested. And I think that that Tottenham win that game. Next is Manchester City against Arsenal. I think that City are going to win, and it's going to be 2-1. As in, City are going to score 4-1, or it's going to be 3-1, or 2-1, or 5-1. But I think Arsenal get one goal. That's my little weird kind of, I have a gut feeling about that. Maybe a Giroud header in the last couple of minutes. But yeah, again, people sleep on Arsene Wenger all the time as being a decent manager. And I think that Manchester City will have too much for Arsenal. They're playing so well. They're at home. Their fantasy football nightmares are made of, because they, one week they can rest Sergio Aguero, and then they can rest Leroy Sané, then they can rest Raheem Sterling, then they can rest Gabriel Jesus, then they can rest David Silva, Bernardo Silva, Kevin De Bruyne, blah blah blah. So that's crazy. Arsenal, you would imagine Wenger is going to be a little bit more defensive in his setup. I doubt that all three of Lacazette, Ozil and Sanchez will all play. It would not surprise me if there was a Welbeck and a Iwobi kind of feel to this game coming forward, and I don't think Arsenal will have enough. So the next game is Chelsea against Manchester United. So I just want to go back and look at the form table from beforehand that I sent to a group of couple of friends. So Manchester United's form at Chelsea is, then this is their last, I can't be bothered to count it, but it's since 2002 is draw, loss, 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 draw, loss, draw, loss, loss, draw, one, loss, loss, draw, loss. That win that I spoke of there was against 9 men. I do think that it's a different proposition this year. I don't think that Chelsea look as great as they have done in the past. And I think that obviously comparing a 2002 Manchester United and Chelsea team to the now is useless, because the 25 players in the squad are completely different. But what I would say is I think Chelsea are going to win again, or it's going to be a draw. It would not surprise me if this is a... if this is a 0-0 draw, if Mourinho sticks somebody on Hazard, as he has done in the past, and really just tries to basically kill the game. And I think that's a huge shame. The one little bit of hope that we have going into Sunday is hopefully Paul Pogba will be back, and hopefully N'Golo Kante will be back, because that will really liven up the midfield. But yes, I would say this is tough. But I am going to say that United and Chelsea is a draw, and I don't really have anything else to say about that. I just think the Kante-Pogba thing is really interesting and really big for both teams, and I think that both teams will be happy with a draw. Chelsea just coming off a 3-0 loss to Roma, and they've come from abroad. I think United played at Old Trafford against Benfica. But yes, we will see. We will see, but I'm going to put that one down as a draw. Then the last game is Everton against Watford. I think this is a really tough game to call. I'm just going to go Watford. And I don't know why. I just don't have a lot of faith in the way Everton are playing right now. And every time I see their lineup, I look at it, and they have about five or six players playing who shouldn't be playing, and like four of them are on the bench who should be starting, and a couple have even been left at home. So yes, those are my picks. I have Stoke versus Leicester is going to be a draw. I have West Brom to beat Huddersfield. I have Newcastle to beat Bournemouth. Burnley to beat Southampton. Swansea and Bournemouth and Brighton and Hove Albion, sorry, to be a draw. Liverpool to beat West Ham. Tottenham to beat Palace. City to beat Arsenal. Chelsea and United to draw, and Watford to beat Everton. Those are my picks. The runtime of 45 minutes, a little bit longer this time, and it will take me a little longer. I think if I review my picks from the week before and then make picks, as long as a couple of things I want to talk about, it will get up to the 45 minute mark or so. But yes, thank you very much for listening. I appreciate your time. I'm going to start kind of dabbling and maybe getting some guests on, some friends of mine at university who fancy themselves as people who know exactly what's going on in the world of football. Yes, please, please subscribe to the podcast. Please leave a review. Any questions you have, please don't be afraid to direct message me on Twitter or on Instagram at TheJackFarr. And obviously any retweets or shares to get the podcast out there to the people is always muchly appreciated. Thank you very, very much for listening, and I'll see you soon.